the USS District of Columbia deployed its cargo, a two-man Eisenhower-class Navy stealth sub called Agincourt, on which I served as navigator alongside engineer David Scott Lavelle. And once it was loose, it slipped away into the Pacific and began to part with its escort. And the sea was in shambles here. There were dead fish and splintered boat hulls floating in the current. But that was far from unexpected. It was recently estimated, in fact, that since the Leviathan awoke some months ago, it has critically disrupted over 400 trillion cubic tons of water and all the life therein, and was becoming a potential threat to shipping lanes, as well as naval operations. It has been classified for these reasons, and others, as a severe national security threat. And so the Navy built the Agincourt on the Tuscany's blueprint, and selected Lavelle and myself to man it, and then instructed the pair of us to hunt down the Leviathan and lure it up from the deep so District of Columbia could move in for a swift kill without exposing herself in the chase. For some hours after we entered the sea, there was little else but quiet there, and the hulking mass of the District of Columbia as it followed. But then even that faded into the seawater. And when it did, Lavelle and I found ourselves alone in the midst of the ocean. He descended the hatch ladder from the operations center and joined me for a moment in the sphere, and said, "So, Latner, you're the nav. How do you plan on finding this thing in the middle of the ocean?" And I said back, "I'm already tracking it. You see that?" I pointed up at a corridor of seawater that was moving north and that carried on for miles. We'd been following it for some time. And Lavelle pursed his lips. "I didn't realize there was a draft that big out here." "There wasn't," I said, "until earlier this morning. That Leviathan swam on down this way a few hours ago, and it left us as a little present for the two of us." "Well, then we'll be sure to thank it. How much longer before we see the darn thing?" "Not long. Look at those fish." I nodded toward a school of the things. "You ever see anything like that?" He shook his head. "They look panicked. And they're swimming towards us for a reason. Closer we get, more we'll see. Just you wait." And we did. What started as an isolated school of fish soon became several, and then the nautical retreat boiled over in scale and number into a mammoth, seething cloud of life all whirled up into a frenzy and pushing desperately south against the riptide like birds from a storm cloud or the onset of winter. The two of us said not a word until the crowd broke, and Agincourt again found itself floating in the open, quiet sea. And then I brought Agincourt to a full stop, and Lavelle said, "Holy God." Ahead of us, and not more than 2 miles off, was a titanic mass of shadow, unmoving and so breathtakingly huge that not even all of its edges could be fully seen. It was the Leviathan. Blue whales and dinosaurs themselves paled in comparison to this monstrous, mountainous thing. And as Lavelle and I sat and stared at it, it made its first move. A turn away into the depths behind it, followed by a sharp dive. In doing so, of course, the silhouette of its full form came into view, and the sight of it stole the breath right from our lungs. We couldn't have said a word at that moment, even if we had known the words to say. We simply stared out at the thing and did our unworthy best to appreciate the magnitude of its vastness. And it was as long as they said it was, an enormous, slithering serpent thing whose tail broke into a thousand other tails that drifted and curled and dragged lazily behind it and fell away deep into the blackness. But seeing it in person was altogether a whole new experience. And before saying another word to me, Lavelle hopped back to the ladder and climbed up to the operations room. "Agincourt to District of Columbia," I heard him say. "This is Lieutenant Lavelle. We've located the Leviathan, 33.934 by negative 153.4570. And we're giving chase, but it's moving fast, and it's moving down. Look to the riptide. Advise that district follow our mark, but stand by to engage until we've brought it back up to you." I gunned the thrusters as he spoke and followed the slipping shadow away and into the deep. 12 knots of speed. Agincourt crawled, then cruised, and then ran with all haste in pursuit of a monster. And Lavelle came down the hatch ladder a few minutes later and said, "Latner, the district is en route." "Making speed?" "Well, she's moving, but she's not coming out into the open until we've got this thing where she wants it. Any ideas on that front?" And a moment passed before I said, "You've seen the footage from Tuscany, right?" Little bits and pieces, yeah. Well, the pilot caught the Leviathan's attention, and it chased him straight up to the surface. But he made it, didn't he? Yeah, by the skin of his teeth, from what I hear, and he gave up deep diving altogether. What's your point? Point is, the Agincourt is faster than the Tuscany. If we can get the thing to chase us, we can outrun it, and then get District on its flanks. Couple of torpedoes to her side, and boom, we have ourselves a 300,000-ton museum piece. There was another pause, and then Lavelle broke it with the worst question of all. And what if the District can't put a dent in that thing? You saw how big it is. Well, then I suppose we'll need to find another ride home. The Agincourt filled up her ballasts and followed the Leviathan down into the depths of the Pacific, past where the water stopped the sunbeams at the gate, and before long, all that could be seen was nothing at all. From that point forward, it was the boat's humble capacity for sonar that kept us moving in the right direction, with an occasional nudge from the monster's own flood current. Lavelle broke a long silence. What's the plan? At the moment, I'm just trying to get the darn thing's attention. The closer we are to District when it notices us, the better. But as it stands, we're getting in too deep. Way too deep. And we were. By the depth chart, we had just passed 15,000 feet, and we needed to get things turned around. Well, go ahead and strap yourself in. He did, in the passenger's chair behind mine. And then I hit the front lights and gunned the thrusters. What the heck are you doing? Like I said, I'm getting its attempt. But then I stopped, and I eased back on the throttles. The lights of the Agincourt spilled their glow to the hole of the abyss, and found it empty. Where the heck did it go? I dialed up the brightness of the lights and brought the boat to a full stop. I don't know. And we scanned the water for hints of movement or shadow, but there was no movement and nothing but shadow and silence. I moved Agincourt from a rest to a light cruising speed, and her searchlights swept and swooped and cast themselves to the rocks. Nothing. Darn. Unless... I hit the lights off. Now what? What is it? There's no way something that big just disappeared. So, where did it go? I blew the ballasts and adjusted Agincourt's heading for the surface, and then I gunned the thrusters harder than ever. It didn't go anywhere. It knew we were there all along. It just dragged us down here into the dark to shake our tail. What? A thing that size is afraid of being hunted? It's not being hunted. We are. Agincourt lifted herself up through the water with as much speed as she could muster up for the running, but time was against us. Up ahead, we saw the shadow of a titan moving fast to block off our escape. It was the difference in shade between deep twilight and midnight black. We've got to move, I said. See if you can raise the District. And Lavelle unbuckled his seatbelt and flew to the hatch ladder and climbed it two rungs at a time, and not a moment later, I heard the static of the radio as he lifted a hail. Hello, hello, District of Columbia. This is Agincourt. Can you read me? Over. Static. Audible even in the pilot sphere. The sheer bulk of the Leviathan was blocking the signal. Keep trying to raise the escort. I'm going to get out from under this thing and clear the way. Hello, hello, District of Columbia. This is Lieutenant Lavelle of the Agincourt. Can you read me? Over. The Agincourt banked hard over to her starboard flank, and I allotted her all speed for the escape. 17 knots flat. I looked up. The Leviathan's shadow bathed the whole of the seabed in its mass. Still, we ran. Hello, hello, District of Columbia. This is the USS Agincourt. Can you hear me? Over. More static. 19 knots. Agincourt was moving faster than most vessels already. And yet, the shadow above us had not struggled at all to keep us within perimeter. So big was its source. 21 knots. District of Columbia, this is Agincourt. Can you read me? Over. Respond. Still nothing. And I looked up. The shadow was murky and ill-defined, but I could make out the monstrous alien forest of its mighty tentacles, which wrapped and curled and spread out on all directions in the absence of movement. It looked like a black star seen through a bent lens of time, but it was slipping back behind us. Agincourt was more than a match for speed. Hello, hello, District of Columbia. This is Lieutenant Lavelle of the Agincourt. Can you read? Still, I heard static. But there were bursts of clearer sound, too, just barely over the threshold of audibility. We were getting into the clear, and quickly, almost too quickly. Hello, District of Columbia, this is Agincourt. Do you read? Over. Can you hear me? I looked up and back over my shoulder. 26 knots. Crap. The Leviathan wasn't pursuing us after all. It was moving back up. I fired up all of Agincourt's lights and thrusters and blew her ballasts. We began to climb. Lavelle! What? What is it? Any luck on the radio? None yet. Why? The Leviathan's not moving after us. It's going up. Good. The district will hit it when it gets close, then. It's not going to get close. It's going to come up right underneath the boat. The sub won't be able to use its armament at that range. There was a pause. Oh my god. Oh my god. Move! Move! Move, gosh darn it! Move! Get us up there! Just keep trying to raise the ship. The massive shadow of the Leviathan was moving up into the brighter waters, and I could see its tentacles falling into line as it gained speed. Hello, District of Columbia. This is Agincourt. Can you read me? Over. Respond. Respond. 27.3 knots. 3,000 feet below the surface. 2,000 roughly to the district's test depth. The Agincourt continued her climb, and gradually as she did, the waters began to brighten. The pressure gauge began to fall, and the Leviathan, now swimming fast far above and to the left of us, came closer into view. Only then did I understand fully. District of Columbia stood no chance, even in an unfair fight. This beast was unstoppable. Hello, hello, District of Columbia, this is Agincourt. Can you read me? Over. Hello, Agincourt. Is District Columbia here? Reading. Over. We're move. Listen to me, Lavelle said. Listen to me. Ensign, we are telling you we do not have the Leviathan in tow. I repeat, we do not have the Leviathan in tow. It got between us and is heading for the coordinates I listed earlier. If you're there, you need to fall back immediately. Do you copy? Leave. Now! 1,000 feet. 800. 750. Breaking up, the coordinates listed T3.4 by negative 150.45 ending by package. Wait. Wait. District of Columbia, do you copy? This is Lieutenant Lavelle of the USS Agincourt. Are you there? Do you... My heartbeat kicked up into my throat. I knew that sound. The roar of the Leviathan from the Tuscany tapes. Clearly, the beast had exhausted its usefulness for stealth. And that could only mean a single thing. Darn it! And Lavelle joined me in the pilot sphere. Jesus, what was that? We're too late, that's what it is. We're too late. And we were. Although Agincourt's current of speed swept us in closer before I pulled it to a stop. It was a stop with a view, though. A helpless and terrible view. We saw the mountainous back of the Leviathan, and its great maw covered with the shield wall of its writhing tentacles, absorbing a series of torpedo charges from the escort sub. It discharged a flurry of Mark 48s from the pods. Those torpedoes left on rockets and detonated in waves. And for a fleeting moment, I thought it might be enough, if properly targeted, to turn back the Leviathan, or wound the darn thing, or something. But the beast took the hits and only crawled forward. And before long, the sub had only its ballistic arsenal, nothing appropriate for a fight like this. It began to throw its whole effort to a retreat, but an Ohio-class is a hulking mammoth, 2 football fields in length and nearly 19,000 long tons of metal and rivets. It is fast, but not fast enough. The District of Columbia was doomed. Try to raise the Dixon, Lavelle, I said, and my voice trembled when I did. The district is dust. As I said that, the final torpedo in the Columbia's armament was launched. It sped through the water and trailed a skipping, sputtering wake, and hit a tentacle, and exploded tremendously but fruitlessly upon it. And then, after a moment of silence, the Leviathan unraveled itself, and its tentacles blocked out the last of the sunbeams at dusk, and they swirled and curled and wrapped their vastness around the hulk of the district. And then, the vessel was gone. Gosh darn it! I pulled Agincourt away from the feasting with all speed. 20 knots. Hello, USS Dixon, do you read? This is Lieutenant Lavelle of the Agincourt. Respond, over. 22 knots. Hello, USS Dixon. This is the USS Agincourt, requesting a pickup. Do you read? Over. 23 knots. I felt a rumbling and a shaking and a mighty displacement in the water behind us, and the Agincourt buckled and rolled. I looked behind me. 23-5. Hello, Dixon, this is the Agincourt. Do you copy? Over. Oh, God. The Leviathan had finished its meal and was turning around. Its tentacles alone forced a flood of riptide. And then, God Almighty, there it was. The Maw. It was big. Hideously, monstrously, impossibly big. A yawning canyon and a mouth all the same. What the heck is this thing? Hello, Agincourt. This is the USS Dixon, responding to a request for pickup. What is your heading? The Leviathan opened its eyes, and Agincourt was suddenly awash in an orange glow. Jesus. Lavelle! Hold on, Dixon. What? Cancel pickup. What? Why? It sees us. Tell Dixon to get itself to safety. We will try to shake this thing and rendezvous. Dixon, do you copy? Over. Loud and clear, Agincourt. The Leviathan's tentacles flew into form behind it as it gave chase. Help us, please, please, Jesus. Listen to me. We are currently heading northwest with all speed. The USS District of Columbia has been destroyed. I'm sorry, say again, over? The Columbia is gone? Affirmative. The Leviathan has destroyed the USS District of Columbia. We are now... Son of a... I gunned Agincourt's thrusters for all they were worth. They groaned and protested, but they did their job, if only just. 30 knots. Even if the ocean itself seemed to be draining into the thing's mouth by the lake load. Come on, baby, come on, come on! Agincourt, this is Dixon Actual. Please confirm destruction of District of Columbia. Over. Yes, sir. The Leviathan took everything the district had to throw at it, sir, and then it just... ate the ship. We have located your beacon, Agincourt. The destroyer group is moving in to rescue and engage. My heart stopped. Lavelle! I know. Dixon, are you there? Captain Gilsey, do not engage, sir. Do not engage. I promise you, sir, there is nothing short of a nuke that can stop this thing. Get that destroyer group to safety and we will meet you there. Negative, Agincourt. You brought the thing into the open. We will handle it from here. Gilsey, out. 34 knots and climbing. Dixon, respond! Over! The Agincourt flew admirably, but from the sound and from its own effort, it rumbled and it shook, and it swam against the might of the current. Dixon, this is Agincourt, requesting you disengage immediately. Respond! Respond, gosh darn it! The Leviathan was gaining. And whether or not that meant it was moving swift or simply dragging the sea itself to its yawn was unclear and irrelevant. All I knew and all I cared to averse was the fact that Agincourt was failing, despite a mighty effort to put distance between herself and her hunter. It was a race against time and all the odds. And it was a race we were losing. 36 knots of speed. Dixon, this is Agincourt. Answer me, you freaking psychopaths! Disengage! Every dial and needle and stick and lever rattled in their sets, and my eardrums shook. And upstairs, I could hear Lavelle screaming in rage and pounding the side of the control desk with a wrench. 37 knots. The closer the Leviathan got, the more speed we needed just to keep ourselves alive. It was like being caught by the pull of gravity on the edge of an event horizon. One wrong move, a single mistake, would doom us. I began to see the shadow of the Maw creep over the ship, Agincourt was nearly at capacity now, 39 knots, and it wasn't enough. Agincourt to Dixon. Agincourt to Dixon. Do not engage. And Lavelle paused when he heard the static. Once again, the mass of the Leviathan blocked our signal, and there was nothing we could do to stop it. The water rushed into the maw, and Agincourt went with it, tumbling helplessly and desperately, and with its thrusters flaring with all of their strength of arms and all their force. Latner, he said, The force of the explosion from an anti-submarine ship-to-ship missile undoubtedly expanded through the sea and seemed to set the whole ocean ablaze. The Dixon had arrived. And another explosion went off, and it shook our ship to the core, and the Leviathan rerouted its course for the surface with demonic speed. Behind us, by not more than a few hundred feet, we felt its mass as it moved. Undersea waves were unleashed that enveloped and consumed the Agincourt and sent her tumbling ballast to ballast and left her nearly belly up in the water before she rolled around again. The explosions were getting closer. Lavelle, don't they know we're down here? I don't know. I think they might have lost our beacon with the radio signal. What does that mean? It means they think we're dead. Can you try to raise them again? I don't know. There was a mighty flash of light. And then... The force of the latest depth bomb washed through the sea and through the Agincourt's battered hull and into her cabin. It sent me reeling despite my restraints. My ears rang and reported back nothing but that ringing, and the ship buckled and tumbled and groaned and shuddered and shook, and the lights flickered and the alarm blared and the panels flashed red. I unbuckled myself from the toppled chair and rose to my feet shakily and stumbled over to the controls. The explosions were no further off than before the last one, but my ears struggled now to report them properly. Everything was muffled. Everything swam. My head, my vision. I fumbled at the controls and found half unresponsive and the others blaring. What? Lavelle! I heard myself shout. Lavelle, can you raise the Dixon, Lavelle? I kept fumbling over the controls. Dials and readouts and panels were in their off state. I tried boosting the thrusters, but heard only the click-click-clicking of the control in its set. Lavelle, are you there? I could hear my own heart more so than the battle. Lavelle? And gradually, the shock began to fade. And when it did, it gave way to something worse. Fear. Lavelle! I ran from the control set to the hatch ladder and looked up. A droplet of water hit me in the eye, then another, and another, and I started to climb. As my hand hit the top rung, it slipped on fluid, but I grabbed it tighter and I pulled myself up into the operations center below the hatch. Lavelle? There was no response. Of course there was no response. Lavelle was sitting at an unnatural angle against the far wall, and his eyes were still and shut, and a bit of blood pooled from his right ear down onto his shoulders, where it was washed away by a steady trickle of seawater from the bent hatch, and that became a stream. That became several. And lights flickered again. I reached my friend and knelt down next to him in the water. Lavelle, hey buddy, hey, can you hear me? I heard naught but the slightest, quietest whimper, but it was drowned out by other sounds quickly. The roar of the beast. And then one more, far ominous even than that. I heard rushing water from down below, and when I looked over the edge, I saw the ocean inside the pilot sphere, and it was rising up to meet me. But I could only see it from a sunbeam that struck through the hatch. I grabbed a wrench.
Lavelle, we're at the surface. I can see the sun. It's right there, buddy. That's home. Just sit tight, okay?
I climbed up two more rungs on the ladder and swung at the hatch with a wrench. It bent up ever so slightly. I swung again. An inch of progress. The water crested the threshold of the operations room, and Lavelle whimpered.
Hang in there, buddy, okay?
I swung again. And the lights shut off for a final time. Agincourt tumbled and groaned as she died.
Come on, please, Jesus.
The hatch began to bend a bit more, and the sunlight brightened, and the water from below now had reached the midpoint of Lavelle's upturned service boots. I felt a release.
Got it!
I had forced a hole in the hatch big enough to put a hand through, but then water dumped inside at twice the rate of the surge from below. I turned my head and slid down the ladder and stumbled back as it began to pool up. What the? Then I looked up through the hole, and only once I did I realize the mistake. We weren't at the surface, just merely close to it. Not more than 100 feet away, but many, many feet too far. Water flooded the operations room from both ends and washed me up against the wall next to Lavelle. The ocean threw itself to our beating, and it pounded us in waves and torrents and buckets. I couldn't breathe for seconds at a time, but I grabbed Lavelle's hand, and he squeezed with all the strength he had, just enough to bend his fingertips around the side of my palm, and then we began to float up to the ceiling.
I'm sorry, buddy. I'm really, really, really sorry. I tried.
I heard no more explosions from the battle not far off, just the triumphant roar of the Leviathan and the rush of water and my own ragged, heaving, shaking breaths. I pressed my lips to the ceiling and sucked in all the air that was there to breathe, and I could feel Lavelle slip beneath the surface, and the water tightened up around my chest, and then it was over my face. Then a shadow fell over the hulking bones of the Agincourt's hull. I felt a slamming impact and a rush, and then... And then...
I see them. They're inside.
I opened my eyes up. They hurt. And I didn't know where I was. And I didn't know when it was. I knew nothing at all, in fact. But I heard footsteps and saw a shadow. And then I felt something grab my shoulders and hoist me up. A bucket's worth of seawater fell from my shirt, hair, and face.
It's okay, you're okay. Lieutenant Latner, is it? Hey, come here, it's okay. Don't worry, we're gonna get you out of here, okay?
Ensign, tell the ANG that we've got a survivor.
Yes, sir.
I don't know what...
It's okay.
Lavelle.
What's that?
Lavelle, is he, I don't remember. I can't...
And then I started crying in pitiful, racking, heaving, messy sobs.
Hey, it's okay, it's okay. Could somebody help me out here?
And then I started to slip. And then everything went black.
I woke up in a hospital bed. For more than a day, I was delirious. But once I came to, I was filled in as I, in turn, was able to recall my story for a report. From what I was told, the following had happened. The Dixon had been destroyed. Lost with all hands, along with its escort, and, of course, the District of Columbia. All told, the Navy lost more than 700 good men in this operation, and amongst them was a lieutenant named David Scott Lavelle, in the deadliest day in the history of the Navy at peacetime. But I learned something else as well. Based on the impact mark alongside the Agincourt's wrecked hull, it is evident that after feasting on the Dixon, the Leviathan hit Agincourt and knocked her clear to the surface, where another ship, the Arleigh Burke destroyer, found her rolling in the surf with a broken hatch. and the Navy will undoubtedly make an effort to cover up this story and explain away their losses as a disastrous training failure. But I'll have no part of that, nor any further efforts to hunt down the Leviathan. No, this story needs to be told, for those men lost, and for Lavelle, and for you. And like the pilot of Tuscany before me, I have accepted the fact that that thing down there should not be disturbed, and neither should its home. For the love of God himself, do not venture far into the deep, deep pit of the wild Pacific. For all of our sakes.